The thrill and excitement of March Mania is here, and DraftKings Sportsbook, one of America's top-rated sportsbook apps, is giving new customers a shot to turn $5 into $150 instantly in bonus bets with any college basketball bet. You can find all the lines and available odds, of course, at the DraftKings Sportsbook app. North Carolina listeners, don't forget, DraftKings Sportsbook is now live in your state. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app and use code SBNFL. New customers can bet $5 to get $150 instantly in bonus bets only at DraftKings Sportsbook with code SBNFL. The crown is yours. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or in West Virginia, visit www.1800gambler.net. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly on behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort. 21 plus, age varies by jurisdiction, void in Ontario. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See dkng.com/bball for eligibility, deposit restrictions, terms, and responsible gaming resources.
Hey everybody. Oh boy, that was a rough one this last Sunday.
Couldn't even get to the intro.
I know. It's like usually I'm so peppy and bringing in the show, bringing in the hosts and all that kind of stuff. And it's just like, I think I spent a lot of emotion, John, in the post-game show talking about my thoughts on the show, but we will get yours and mine, more of mine, I guess, and yours that we haven't heard quite yet. On the Bengals losing to the Steelers 23-20 in one of the wackiest games in recent memory. We've got a lot to get to tonight. We're going to talk about that, recap that game. We've got Jeff Hobson of Bengals.com coming on the show. First time in a long time, too long, and we hope to make that a bit more of a regular thing. So happy to have him coming on here. And then we will close up with some matchups and things to watch for against the Cowboys coming up here. A game, I don't know if you want to call that one a must win. We'll talk about that, but a game that the Bengals need to start really righting the ship with based on a lot of different factors, not only things going on with Dallas, but in their own building. But I'm Anthony Cazenza. He is John Sheeran. We've got Jeff Hobson of Bengals.com coming up. John, how you doing, man? How you doing?
They can't have a normal opener. I swear it's like, I remember 2015, like they played really well against the Raiders. And ever since then, it's been either insanely chaotic or downright terrible. Like they won at the last second against the Jets in 2016. They got shut out by the Ravens in 2017. There was a crazy game against the Colts in 2018. 2019 was also kind of interesting against Seattle. And then every single opener for Joe Burrow, they've had three home openers in the last 3 years. They've all been insane endings. Like, you can't make this stuff up. And then you have the most unexpected injury of all time happen at the worst possible person, the second worst possible person, I guess, for that situation, how it went down. They always make it interesting, man. It's always good for us, though. It's good content.
It is. And the last two openers have amassed 10 full quarters. I mean, you've had five full quarters of each game, essentially. And coming down to the wire, and you know, it went one way last year for them and another way this year. You just don't really ever expect to lose your long snapper. And when you do, it really shows how valuable that position can be. And it really shows when you don't talk about a guy for a long time, except for his exceptional hair and occasional personality and the Pro Bowl berth he had a few years ago. When you don't talk about the guy, it shows how rock solid, steady, and awesome he is at his job. And, you know, now, unfortunately, Clark Harris is not with the team. He's on IR. And so the Bengals have had to move on to Cal Adamitis. Let's talk about the Steelers game before we get to Jeff Hobson here in just a little bit. I contended, John, that this game is both insanely frustrating, but also there are moral victories, I guess, to take out of this if you want to go there. The you know, this game, to me, a lot of Steelers fans are coming out of the woodwork and now beating their chest. And I'm seeing comments on our YouTube channel of after the post game reactions. I'm seeing comments on Twitter and all kinds of different things talking about We Day and blah, blah, blah. To me, that is not a victory really to be super proud of. And I don't mean to sound sour grapes in saying that. I saw a quarterback in Mitchell Trubisky who could basically do nothing unless it was a flea flicker or some crazy gadget play. I saw a running game that was really stagnant. I guess the offensive line in a way held up pretty well against the Bengals because they only allowed one sack, but the Bengals defense was kind of having their way in a lot of respects. And I just didn't see a dominant Steelers team in that win. I saw a Bengals team really shooting themselves in the foot. And even after the avalanche of mistakes, somehow the Bengals were right there and had the game in hand to win it at the very end of regulation.
I mean, 49 of the 53 players the Steelers had, they played bad. Like they played a bad football game. There's no reason why that game should have been close with the quarterback of the other team throwing four interceptions in the first 25 minutes and fumbling once. And for the Steelers to not turn the ball over, to basically not take any sacks, and to still have that bad of a day offensively, I do think it means more that the Steelers offense is just a ways away from being competitive, more than the Bengals defense being the 85 Bears necessarily. But I think credit to the Bengals defense for, you know, showing up and proving that last year towards the end of the season wasn't necessarily a fluke. Like that was one of my, not concerns, but biggest things I was going to watch for. Like, does this continuity that the defense has, does that really truly matter in terms of them, you know, elevating into a top tier unit? And like they're definitely pointing towards that direction with this performance. Like they just played incredible football for, again, not really making a ton of game impacting plays. They just did enough to stifle the Steelers offense at every turn. Like the Steelers had a really bad offensive day. They only scored, I guess that would be 16 points considering they got 7 from Minka Fitzpatrick on the second play that the Bengals ran. So yeah, Steelers didn't look necessarily great, and 5 turnovers is 5 turnovers. It's incredibly hard to overcome that. That's why 99% of teams who have ever done it just haven't been able to overcome it. And despite that, like, you know, the Bengals offense, I know this sounds weird or sounds stupid, but removing the turnovers, they were fine. Like they moved the ball on most of those series. They didn't really punt the ball that much. They got into scoring range. Burrow just played one of his worst games I think he's ever played, at least going back to 2018 at LSU. I've never seen him play that bad.
And I look back at his stats at LSU, and I don't remember seeing a game that had 4 interceptions in it in college really at all. So, I mean, we're talking high school, maybe peewee football. I mean, I don't know. This is probably one of his worst performances as a pro there. But even with it all, things started to kind of right a little bit in the second half, and they're right there. And he got them. He and Ja'Marr Chase and others got them in position to win the game, all said and done. So, I mean, I guess, you know, we kind of held this notion last year where it was like, you know, no matter what circumstance, you felt like Joe Burrow was going to keep you in the game and or win the game. And even because of his faults in the game, he still had them in position to win this game when it was all said and done. So, it's a maddening game, not only to lose the way you do, but also to that team. And to really start your season off on just this like really frustrating, annoying note, right? And so it's going to be interesting to see for me where this team, what direction this team takes this loss towards, because there are still a lot of things to figure out. It sounds like you wanted to say something, so say your piece. But after, I would like to get your thoughts on, because I mentioned this a little bit about playing guys in the preseason. There's this notion out there now. A lot of teams, you know, I think the teams were 3-8 that didn't play their starters in the preseason. Two biggest examples were the two Super Bowl teams, the Rams and the Bengals, who really didn't look very good in either of their respective contests. So I want to get your piece on some of the other stuff, but I'd love to hear your thoughts on that too.
Well, we can start with that because it's not only the fact that, you know, Burrow couldn't play even if he wanted to in the preseason because of the appendectomy.
Right.
And I think he said on the first edition of his podcast with Colin Cowherd today that he wanted to play in the preseason. Like, that was the plan. That was what he wanted to do. And then the appendectomy kind of threw it all into the dirt. So not only did the Bengals not play in the preseason, and that was mostly by design, the Steelers were one of the teams that did consistently play in the preseason because they needed to figure out who was going to be their quarterback. They gave Mitchell Trubisky a ton of reps in the preseason, along with Kenny Pickett and Mason Rudolph. So, you know, they were as in sync as you could be for a week one team. Now, granted, didn't really do much offensively to their credit, but in comparison to the Bengals, they definitely knocked more of that supposed rust off. And just in terms of the rust, I know that if they have a healthy Clark Harris out there, that the snap is fine and the field goal or the extra point is good. And I know that Darren Simmons said that, you know, even with Clark Harris out there, it still would have been blocked because it wasn't great protection by Drew Sample. But I don't know. It feels like that snap, even on replay, looks pretty slow compared to Clark Harris's like 3,000th snap in his career. So I do think it gets there in time in order for McPherson to make the kick. And yeah, if Kevin Huber falls on the other snap and then they kick again and maybe it goes better, like they still win the game despite all of that. And I get that, but it still goes back to Burrow. Like, interceptions happen. They happened last year, mostly when they weren't even his fault. But these interceptions, I think, were different in a worse way. Like, he was just forcing things that just weren't there. And it took mm-hmm. him really long to realize that, hey, the Steelers are just sitting in these same coverage looks and these routes. Like, if I'm going to throw these routes, I have to place them in different spots or have to be early. And he just wasn't really getting the message. And it really frustrated me personally. Like, TJ Watt only had like one interception. I see only one interception as a defensive lineman, but he could have had like two or three. And it didn't seem like they were really keen in on that either. They weren't really taking notes about what was happening there, just how Watt kept reading where Burrow was going on some of those short routes. There was just a lot of frustrating things that you would expect Burrow to just be better at, regardless if it's week one, regardless if he hadn't played at all in the preseason or didn't practice much in training camp. So, you know, I credit to him. You know, he's not going to make excuses in that regard, and he didn't do so today in his media availability or anything like that. But yeah, I think even beyond just the rust in the preseason, you would have expected more from Burrow in the first half.
Yeah, and you know, the TJ Watt thing, I mean, the one batted ball and then the one he ended up intercepting, I mean, he didn't even engage with Lael Collins. He mm-hmm. just kind of stood there, and it's from film study and play recognition, right? I mean, he just kind of sat there, and he's like, this ball's going to come probably to my side here, and I'm going to time it and get in the way of it. So I guess kudos to him for recognizing what was happening out there. But yeah, there were a couple of, I think it was the one ball that was deep across the middle. It was like late and a little behind that got picked off. The first interception by Fitzpatrick, that looked like a totally forced pass that just, you know, wasn't, the play just wasn't there. So there are just some things where you go, man, it's just not very Burrow-esque. And now when you look at some of those things too, you had some familiar issues on the offensive line. Now, some are different. Some are the same. Jonah Williams, I think Alex Highsmith had three sacks on the day. He was having a day. Jonah Williams was struggling. Cordell Volson up and down. I think he allowed seven pressures on the day. You know, Lael Collins, you know, TJ Watt had a day as well. So, I mean, you're looking across the board and you're going, oh, man, none of these guys played. So Kappa and Collins were nursing kind of some injuries and stuff throughout the preseason. And so you go, okay, how much is this carryover? But you look at the thing of it, John, 11 quarterback hits, 7 quarterback sacks. That's the same numbers in those statistical columns as it was in the Super Bowl just a handful of months ago, and what precipitated the four new starters on the offensive line. And you know, the very next game, even though it's months and months later and four new starters, you have an insanely similar stat line to a very negative degree.
Let's talk about this, because every time that the Bengals had like a high sack game, the discussion would happen. They would ask the coaches like the same questions, like what's the concern level with the offensive line? And the answer always revolved around, yeah, I mean, the offensive line didn't play great, but you know, there were encouraging signs, and not all the sacks were on the offensive line. And that's always going to be the case. Like, I think when you chart this, about three or four ended up just being on just clear misses and bad reps from individual offensive linemen. But that is always going to happen. Burrow is always going to be responsible for sacks because, one, sacks are more of a quarterback stat than they are an offensive line stat. And two, Burrow is never going to be Peyton Manning. He's never going to be Tom Brady. He's never going to just give up on plays. He will always take more sacks than a traditional pocket passer counterpart may take. And that's why the offensive line can't be responsible for four sacks game to up the total to seven. Like, that's where the discussion needs to eventually get to, because if he ends up taking 100 sacks in the year, even if the offensive line is only responsible for 50 or 60, that's still too many for the offensive line to allow. So we need to eventually get to that point. Of course, the Steelers defensive line is going to be one of the best that they play all season. And this is the first week, and you know, Cordell Volson's a rookie out there. Lael Collins didn't practice much in training camp, and he's still getting his feet wet, but it just needs to be better. And I think when I say that, I'm looking mostly at Jonah Williams, who had a healthy offseason. He had a full training camp, and he still got beat pretty badly by Alex Highsmith, who is a great player in his own right. We have a lot of respect for him, but he needed to play a lot better considering the position that he was in going into that week. I expected a lot more from him.
I think a lot of us did. And by my statement of seven sacks, 11 quarterback hits, that's not, you know, I don't want that to be a blanket statement of it's only on the offensive line. Yeah. I've said it, and you've said it a lot of times on the show, that, you know, Burrow runs himself into sacks at times and whatnot because of his penchant to make plays and, you know, want to extend plays and all that kind of stuff. We know that's going to happen, and it's usually going to happen a couple of times a game. And there's frustrating elements that come with that, but there are very exciting elements that also come with that. So, you know, I don't want it to be just a, you know, a blanket statement there, but what you said was just absolutely spot on, where you can't compound the two or three that Joe Burrow may run into in a particular game by extending plays and whatnot, by allowing, you know, these handful of bad reps that allow just devastating plays. And seven sacks is inexcusable. It really is to allow that many in a game, and to allow that many in a game after your last game of last season, you just allowed the same amount and you just brought in four new starters. That's where I just have this real trouble wrapping my head around, that this is the same exact result from the Super Bowl, and the offseason focus was to fix that.
Well, in fairness, I guess, you know, two of them were from Volson, and we expected that to be mismatched against Cam Hayward. And Williams was responsible for, I think, most of the other pressures and at least two sacks from Highsmith. So you're talking about like the one returning starter and the guy with the least amount of experience as possible. I think with the new additions, the veteran additions, Ted Karras played great. Alex Kappa played solid. I think both those guys look like the guys that they paid for. And again, with Collins, I think he was like a good embodiment of just the offense as a whole, because he started pretty rough, and then as the game went on, he kind of settled in, and he had a lot of one-on-one opportunities with Watt, and TJ Watt's going to do TJ Watt things. And again, on average, the average defensive line is always going to be better than the average offensive line. So the offensive line is rarely going to have picture perfect days. There's going to be sacks allowed, but to Collins' credit, I think he handled Watt pretty well towards the end of the game. And of course, he's TJ Watt. He's going to do TJ Watt things. But as far as the veteran additions of the offensive line goes, and just, oh, is this offensive line just as bad or not even better than last year? I think the moves that they made are starting to pay off, and they showed their dividends in certain aspects of the game. So it's not a complete hit the red panic button yet.
Yeah, I'm not hitting the panic button. I'm just a little frustrated. But
that was more to people who were talking to me after the game, like, oh, this offensive line is still the same. Let's pump the brakes.
Yeah, it's not the same. And I did see some good things out of Kappa and Karras in particular. I know Kappa, I think it was he and Drew Sample that both combined for a couple of very nice blocks on that fourth down run from Joe Mixon that ended up getting him way deep in the red zone. But the other thing is, too, I know you didn't have T. Higgins. And we'll get to Jeff Hobson in just a minute here, but you still have, this is the other element. It's not just the offensive line issues, but it's the red zone conversion issues as well that are still continuing. And with all the firepower on this offense, the quarterback you have, the running back you have, all of that, I don't see how this, you know, Hurst got involved later. I would like to see him involved in the red zone a bit more, but they're still having problems getting the ball into the end zone. And, you know, and it's almost like without these big giant plays, and when, you know, teams are playing the two deep safeties to try and negate those plays against the Bengals, they're just, I don't know, they're kind of playing almost like a caged animal a little bit, right? They're just frustrated and they're trying to do too much. And I think you saw a little bit of that. And then as you get closer, they're still trying to figure out how to get in the end zone. And it's just, it's not clicking. It's not clicking very often. And that's a bit concerning based on what we saw through the postseason last year.
Yeah. And when they got in, I'm thinking of like one red zone trip specifically when Chase got stopped, quote unquote, stopped at the goal line on it should have been touchdown. They tried to run the ball with Mixon. He gets tackled for loss from like minus two.
Yeah.
And then they have like three passing plays and they can't get the ball into the end zone. And that just has to be better regardless if it's Mike Thomas is playing for T. Higgins. Mike Thomas drops an end zone or potentially a game winning touchdown in the end zone before Jamar Chase ends up catching it. It just needs to be better. And it's week one. Madness happens in week one all the time. I think you're kind of in the right direction though. Like it was kind of a wake up call that, hey, you know, some of these things that we could do last year, you know, we're not going to be able to do it with as much ease this year, regardless of the competition, because they know the best ways to counter out it. And we just have to be quicker to, you know, institute our own counter to attack it as well.
Well, just to kind of close this conversation here, I mean, I think I know your answer, what your answers will be, but was this just a fluke thing? Are you kind of worried? Obviously, this week's going to tell us a lot, but I mean, just how do you feel about this? And how do you feel? I mean, am I being too harsh on the Steelers? I saw an article by our own Matt Minnick talking, you know, it's titled Moving On, which is funny, but it says, you know, that he says in there, the Steelers aren't as bad as you think. I mean, I agree to that to a certain degree, but I was just not impressed really with what I saw outside of basically, like you said, four players on their team, which was Hayward, Watt, Highsmith, and Minkah Fitzpatrick. So, I mean, outside of that, I didn't see anything on offense that really scared me all that much. And I don't know if you're thinking this is a fluke. Or are you concerned? You said you're not hitting the panic button yet. So I kind of think I know where you're going to go.
I mean, first with the Steelers, like, I don't think it's wrong to not give them a lot of credit because, again, they didn't play very well and they played the one type of game that required for them to have a chance of winning, and credit to them for actually doing it. It's football. Mm-hmm. Crazy stuff happens. It's way too early for me to be like, yeah, this team can't adapt to what's happening with defenses scheming against them. We saw this team start kind of slow over the past or last year, and that was mainly because Burrow is hurt or just recovering from an injury. And maybe part of that has something to do with this as well. We don't know how much strength he has in his core to be able to make some of these throws, because the opportunities that they did have down the field, like, they couldn't take advantage of it. I look back to, there was a vertical route to Mike Thomas who stacked the cornerback and he threw it out of bounds a little bit. Yep. One of the interceptions to Tyler Boyd, like the slot cornerback made a great play. He had a great game. But Boyd had him inside leverage. Like, there was no safety in the middle of the field. Like, that could have been a big game or even a touchdown, and Burrow didn't put enough juice on it. It was a little bit late. So it's too early to completely worry that Burrow just doesn't have it yet. But yeah, it's definitely a wake up call for them to be sure.
Yeah. I mean, there's other little elements in this game too, that just made you know, Chase, as wonderful as he played throughout most of the game, there was that drop across the middle that he could have maybe jetted into the end zone knowing his speed. You know, there was that in the game. There was obviously the touchdown he did have that was not challenged based on the spot there. So, I mean, there's just other little frustrating things, or I guess big frustrating things, that make you go, man, this game was just was right there to be had and just wasn't. But they've got the Cowboys on deck, a really interesting matchup. We will talk more about that in just a second. Just want to remind everybody before we get to Jeff Hobson of a couple of things. Number one, you can get this show as well as all of the others on the Cincy Jungle Podcast channel on your favorite audio streamer by subscribing to the Cincy Jungle Podcast channel. You can get this show, The Orange and Black Insider. You can get Talking Football with Bengal Jim and Friends. They just had Marissa Contepelli on their show last night. Hopefully you caught that one. And then, of course, you've got Coach Speak and Chalk Talk from Matt Minnick all on the channel. And we've been bringing you all kinds of stuff, trying to get you stuff almost every day of the week, if not every day of the week. So hopefully you are enjoying it there. And, of course, you can click the icon right beneath John there by the Cincy Jungle logo and subscribe to our YouTube channel. Click the bell to be notified when we go live and when new content is available. One other reminder before we bring in Mr. Jeff Hobson, we've got we're doing a fundraiser, and this is something that we are doing in conjunction with the Pollock Family Foundation. We've got this running. We're going to be running this for a little while longer. We've raised some money. We are giving away prizes. I teased some of those in last week's show. So keep donating. If you send in a super chat, we're collecting that. We're going to add that we've got over the past handful of weeks. We're going to add that to the pile here as well. But give how you can and if you can here. This is a great, great organization. We had David Pollock, former Bengals linebacker, current ESPN personality, on our show, which was a great time talking with him. And they're doing some great work in the community and looking to branch out of the Atlanta and the Georgia area to really make this thing kind of more nationwide. And they're needing our help, not asking for it. We want to help them. So we've got prizes and all kinds of stuff. We're going to run this a little while longer. You got to donate and help out a good cause. So thank you to everyone who has donated to this point and just wanted to, make sure that everybody was aware of the great, great cause that they've got going on. So please, please, please think about donating. All right. Okay. So as week, we are joined by a very special guest. Been way too long, and I am ashamed about it that he has been on this show Mr. Jeff Hobson, the incomparable Jeff Hobson of Bengals.com. How are you, sir? You're in your office. You got new Paycor Stadium behind you there.
I know it. I hear. I'll give you guys give the viewers a look at it. There it is.
Look at that. I love it. That's awesome. You got the view.
I didn't recognize John. So sorry about that, John. I didn't recognize you. Usually you're somebody else.
in a good way or a bad way. Like, I hope I'm presentable.
You're a versatile guy, a man of many faces.
It's only been a minute. He's already graced me.
I know. Well, speaking of a man of many talents like yourself, Mr. Hobson, I guess we'll spend a few minutes with you here, and I guess a good of place as any to begin to kind of get caught up with things after the Bengals lose in week one. What's your sense of the attitude in the locker room after this one? Is it just kind of disgust and frustration? Is it deflation? Is it confusion? I mean, from the coaches, from the players, just such a wacky game and one that seemingly could have and should have been won. I guess, what's your sense of the attitude throughout the locker room as this week begins?
Yeah, I'd probably say urgency. I'm not sure that, I think they were encouraged by the fact that they were a -5 in turnover and still almost won the game. So I think they felt like certainly no panic. I mean, you really can't tell what week it is, And I would say that just from taking the temperature, and it's really hot, it's really kind of hard to do when you're only in there for a half hour or something and then see them on the field for 20 minutes. It's kind of hard to gauge. But my sense is, after talking to some of the guys, that there's urgency, and I think that they felt like whatever kinks they had, they got worked out in that first half. And I think the offense feels encouraged by what happened in the second half of the game. And I think they realized that they were almost a fluke away from winning the thing. Nobody plans on having their long snapper go down. So
right.
I think you guys would probably not be surprised, because they act like a team, in the words of the great Paul Brown, that's been there before.
I mean, recency bias aside, just the three home openers that Joe Burrow has played in the last 3 years have all been crazy. Just recency bias aside, rank them in order of like wackiest to maybe not as wacky.
No, John, you're exactly right. You're exactly right, because I don't know. See, when I saw McPherson bent over after he missed the second one, obviously I flashed back to Randy Bullock, and I was hoping that he was okay. So that was really weird. It's hard to beat that Chargers opener in 2020 with nobody in the stands. That was really weird. Mm-hmm. And then to have AJ Green win the game, the flag dropped. I think that trumps everything just because it was nobody in the stands. But I tell you what, last Sunday was pretty close. I think Jamar Chase scored 8 touchdowns. I'm not sure.
With only one counting. Good Lord.
Yeah, correct. That's right. No, it was no, you're right. It was I still don't think it was as wacky as the 2009 opener. You guys were young. I mean, you guys were probably in junior high then, but
oh man. I mean,
but they were, you know, but I know you guys remember it. And it was the Brandon Stokely, oh my God game.
I still hear Gus Johnson's voice in my head and my nightmares on that one.
And you remember that they came back and they beat Aaron Rodgers in Green Bay and they beat Roethlisberger down here. So now they only have to beat I say this sarcastically, but you know, Cooper Rush and Joe Flacco. That will still be hard enough because it's on the road, but you know, it's was pretty daunting in 2009 too, and they swept the division.
Yeah. Well, what were your impressions or thoughts, I guess, about kind of, I mean, obviously things had to get altered game plan wise with so many turnovers and, you know, they fell behind. So they probably had to pass quite a bit more than they wanted to. But I mean, flow of the game, approach, level of predictability, maybe of the play calling on offense. Are any of these kind of questions that linger in your mind based on everything we saw? Or is it just, look, the turnovers happened and it just kind of became the way it became and they did what they had to do?
Yeah, I think, you know, you never want to throw 53 passes or whatever it was, but they had to. They'll probably, you know, every guy in that field will probably never play 100 snaps again or whatever it was they played. You know, so I think you have to look at this game. You just can't just – I think you got to look at this game in its own special box, you know. He threw a pick six on his first throw of the game. I mean, I don't think things got blown up then, but it was a I do think the one thing I can take from it is I think that's what they're going to see. They are going to see that cover two, and people are not going to let them go deep. And how are they going to beat that? To me, that's what I get out of the game. And it looked like they beat it. I mean, the first, you know, I mean, if they had if they were able to, you know, they got it done. They went down the field. To me, the impressive thing to me was I thought they were going to come out rusty on offense. They did. I thought they would get their feet settled in the second half, and I thought they did. And, you know, last two drives, you know, they had the ball for the last 6 minutes of the second half virtually, and he went down the field. So I think they'd figure out how to move against cover two, but I think that's how they're going to have to do it. They're going to have to – I think Burrow said it today in his news conference, you know, and I think he said this right before he went on a tear last year. You know, you got to give what the defense takes you. You can't force it. He tried to force it to Minka. I think he tried to force it on his last interception. And I think, you know, the realization is that this is just, I think it's going to be like this until they can, you know, until Mixon has a big running game, I think people are going to sit in that cover too on him.
So I think what's getting lost in the fact that the offense played 100 snaps is that the defense kept giving the ball back to them just for not forcing a turnover. And I think only sacking Trubisky once when he ran out of bounds, like that had to be one of the better defensive performances without like game changing turnovers that we've seen at least.
Yeah, John, I agree. I mean, you know, they gave up 130 yards going into the fourth quarter. And I was talking to Logan Wilson today, and, you know, they were disappointed that they didn't get, you know, a turnover or two. I think they felt like that they cost them something, not turning that turnover. You know, they really – I mentioned to him that it seemed like defense, and like you said, the defense had seemed picked up right where they left off in the postseason. They were so good in the postseason, you know, and that's – you know, they didn't give up, but I think they averaged allowing 20 points per game in the four postseason games, and that's right where they were this trip, you know. And but what was missing was the turnovers. You know, they had that great plus seven pad and turnover differential. And, yeah, I agree with you, John. It's about the best defensive performance I can think of without a turnover. I mean, but that's, you know, I don't know how good the Steelers are on. I don't know how good the Steelers are on offense either.
Yeah, Trubisky to me didn't really give a lot of things to be as a Steelers fan to be proud of on the passing performance there. Really, the run game got stymied quite a bit there too. So yeah, pretty good defensive performance by the Cincinnati Bengals and Lou Anarumo's unit.
You know, I think I think that's why Tomlin gave Trubisky the job. He knew he wouldn't throw it away. You know, he knew he would. They probably told him, "Look, we'll get you 7 points on defense, and you do the rest. Don't make a mistake." And Pickett's obviously going to be the long term answer down there, but Trubisky's the he's won almost 60% of his games. So, he's the kind of guy that, you know, they're going to be, I tell you, Pittsburgh's going to be, they're going to be there at the end. I mean, they'll find a way.
They always seem to, don't they? Talking with Jeff Hobson of Bengals.com for a few more minutes here. We appreciate his time and all the great work he does, giving Bengals fans all of the information and insight over at Bengals.com. Jeff, any updates? We've heard some positive but kind of slow progress from T. Higgins in the concussion protocol. Any updates on him, Devin Asiasi, maybe some others that are on the injury report as of last week and this week going into the game against Dallas?
Yeah, it's it looks like that I think Higgins is going to be okay. He was out there on the field. They listed him as limited. I didn't see the tight end, but I can tell you in a minute, though, because they just sent out the injury report, and I think that felt like that Asiaki could, if that's not, John, help me there. Is that how you say it?
Asiasi, yes.
Asiasi, yeah. So, yeah, he did go today. He went limited today. So, you know, he's a, they'd obviously, they wouldn't dress for tight ends. So, you know, he may be, but since he's limited, he may not be ready to go yet. And I think when they got him, I think when they claimed him, I think they thought he might need a couple weeks to get ready. So I think they got Higgins limited too. My guess would be T goes and Asiasi doesn't.
Well, before you get out of here, Jeff, we want to give you a chance to plug your great work at Bengals.com. You have a great article up right now talking about the Bengals' new long snapper, Kyle Adamidis, and a connection that he has with Kevin Huber. Can you kind of break that down for us real quick?
Yeah, he's got the and John, you might help me with the pronunciation there, the Pitt linebacker coach, I think it's McAlee. McAlee and Ryan McAlee, who was Huber's – actually, they were roommates at the University of Cincinnati several years ago, I guess you would say. And McAlee was really – he was helped Adamidis at Pitt. He wasn't his position coach. But Adamidis worked with the linebackers. He felt like he wanted to work on his agility, work on his tackling, and so he worked with the linebacker group. I think he played that in high school a little bit. So he kind of, Ryan was his coach was a linebacker at UC and was a good one. I think he had about 200 career tackles, and it was just kind of an interesting story. Thank you for plugging it. It was, it's about how, what a small world this really is, and he said, Ryan said that he thought there was a lot of similarities with Kevin and Cal, the very, kind of professional guys, serious and, always, kind of study and do what they're supposed to do. And certainly Adamidis has been all of that so far. I know he was in here Tuesday on his off day and he was looking at the Dallas fronts and, that's going to be an interesting. That'll be an interesting matchup because Dallas is, according to Darren Simmons, Dallas likes to bring it. They like to rush the punter, so they're going to do it with a new snapper, and that will be. At least we never talk about the snapper until it's like it's like the Titanic. You never talk about a boat until it sinks. So, and that's kind of where we are with the snappers and the special teams. But really, when you think about it, they've been so good there and so solid, before Brad St. Louis, and I know you guys remember him before he kind of had, he got the yips all of a sudden, and he went from being one of the most solid, reliable snappers in the league that he was gone in about 3 weeks. and which is amazing. But Brad was here for 144 games. He had a great career as a snapper here. You know, he was in his 10th season. Clyde Harris, you know, another 13. So this is only the fourth snapper that Darren Simmons is getting ready for a game. When you think about, you know, all the turnover in his 20 years and to be, you know, to be so consistent at that one position, it's really amazing.
It really is, and it's a testament to Darren Simmons in the, you know, the respect level that he has around the league as one of the best special teams coaches in the NFL. Jeff, before we get you out of here, how do you see this one going Sunday? Personally, whether Dak Prescott was going to be in or not, I kind of felt like the way this game ended, I see this Bengals team coming out firing. I don't know if that means passing the ball a lot or running the ball, but I just think they're going to come out and play passionate football. Now they're going up against a backup quarterback in Dallas, making this potentially an even more lopsided game, albeit a tough one to go on the road and play in that environment. But your take on this game, what you're expecting to see, predictions, all that good stuff.
Yeah, Anthony, it is. I think you hit him right on the head there when you mentioned the backup quarterback. All good Pengal fans, I think, shudder at a backup quarterback because, you know, Mike White was not the first one come out of the blue and strike him. You know, you can. There's all sorts of Bengal villains around there, and although Cooper Rush is although he's a backup and he's got only one NFL start, you know, he's been in Dallas for 5 years. And Logan Wilson told me something interesting. I didn't realize this, but he said that, you know, Rush was there when Kellen Moore. Thank you. Was actually a quarterback. Was actually a point. So he's been there that long. Thank you, John. So you know, he's been there. He's been in the system. So, I mean, even though he hasn't played, he does have those characteristics of a potential Bengals villain. But I don't, you know, they just don't, you know, the Cowboys seem to be struggling with their offensive line. They don't have a lot of weapons. I think Zeke is still a threat. They got two very good running backs, but I think the Bengals do a good job stopping the run. So I to me it comes down to if the Bengals can you know, there's two big matchups. There's the Bengals trying to protect Burrow from Micah Parsons, who is their Trey Hendrickson. You know, barely does a game go by where he doesn't have a bunch of pressures or at least a sack. And the other one, of course, is Jason Diggs. What a great matchup that is. It's all over YouTube, their matchup on, you know, from college when Alabama played LSU. But, you know, he had 11 picks last year. The Cowboys, I think, had 26 interceptions. So that makes you a little nervous with, you know, Joe coming off that four-pick game. So, but I think, I think it's a good matchup in the sense that Dallas isn't going to score a lot of points. And I think that, the Bengals are coming off a game where they've realized what they can and can't do against, you know, like a defensive secondary that Dallas has. So I think it's things happen for a reason. The four picks in the first 25 minutes is going to dictate how they go, at least for the first couple early in the season. They're going to have to, you know, don't force it. See what Mixon can do. See what Chase can do underneath, and I think eventually they'll bust out. But I think I think my two favorite games last year were Vegas and Denver on the road. Two tough road games they had to win. Really didn't have any explosive plays, you know, but they won the games with Eddie. You know, Joe played very smartly. They didn't turn it over. The defense pitched good ones. You know, and let's have one like that. Let's have one like that where, you know, don't give Dallas 20 points and go out, score 24, don't turn it over. I think, you know, Vegas, something between a cross between Vegas and Denver would be kind of nice right about now.
Yeah, and I think those exuded a lot of character of that team last year too. Those wins, you know, yeah. getting them to the Super Bowl. Well, Jeff, we've gone a lot longer than you had said you had wanted us to, but we appreciate it. And I know you quipped earlier about me being in middle school potentially in that 2009 game. I'm a little older than that.
No,
and I can remember. No, I'm 40 next week, man. So, I mean, yes. So I appreciate the comment, but I can remember back in middle school days writing into Hobson's Choice and you answering my questions and getting me going on this path of writing, podcasting, and doing all this stuff. You are a legend. You are awesome to all the Bengal fans and everybody out there. So
that's very kind of you to say. Thanks for writing. John, how old were you in 09?
I was actually in middle school. You were right on the money. I was 13 years old.
Oh, you've done it. Well, I tell you what, you've done a hell of a lot in your young life. You should be proud. That's a pretty good run so far. So that makes you only what? You're only what?
26 years young, man. 26 years
that's,
young.
No, you're doing well. You guys are doing well, man. That's going to inspire me here the rest of the night.
Hell yeah.
So thanks for having me on. I appreciate it.
Yeah, hopefully we can do it again soon, Jeff. I really appreciate the time.
Call anytime.
Thank you, Jeff.
Take care.
One last shot.
I love it. Enjoy the view. I love it.
JFK.
Thanks, Jeff.
All right. So that was Jeff Hobson, the incomparable Jeff Hobson. What a guy. Always great talking with him, catching up with him, giving us the view of the stadium and everything, John. By the way, he might be teeing John up to be his heir apparent at Bengals.com. The way he was just stroking that ego, John. I was like, wow, hey, there's another host here, by the way. he's a big John fan, as we all are.
My Twitter bio now says a versatile guy per Jeff Hobson. So he's the best. I love him to death.
He really is. He's just a very nice man. Very good man. And just, you could sit there and, you know, talk. He's got a good memory on little things, you know, about, you know, how long certain players were here, how many games they played and all that kind of, I mean, talking about Brad St. Louis, I knew he was there for a long time off the top of my head. I don't think I knew he was there for 10 years. I thought he was there for, I don't know, 8, 9. I mean, I knew he was there for a while.
He probably knows like Brad St. Louis's grandpa had this, like his knowledge is just infinite. So
yeah. He's awesome though. And, thanks to him coming on here. We'll try and get him on again this season. And, as we transition to the Cowboys, one other fun announcement that we've got, we kind of locked in a couple of high profile Bengal fans on Twitter personalities for not this week, but next week's listener question show. We're going to do some Bengals chat and different things, but the Bangalorean and Tyler Meinerding, who does the Bengals, the great TikTok video of the Bengals fan counseling series, they're going to join us. They've got a cool thing going on for an Ohio tailgate. While the Bengals are away in New York, they're doing a special event in Ohio. So we're gonna help talk, you know, promote that and talk about that, talk some Bengals and have some fun with those guys. We haven't had them on the show. We've had the Bangalorean on a while ago, have not had Tyler on. So looking forward to that, talking some Bengals, answering some of your questions and just having some fun there. But in the meantime, our thanks to Jeff Hobson of Bengals.com. And we do have also tomorrow, Thursday, Jeff Kavanaugh of the Believe Podcast Network. He's got a huge Twitter following. He's got like 90,000 followers or something. He covers the Cowboys. John and I will be chatting with him, helping to preview that game. So we've got even more coverage for you. And then, of course, we'll do all kinds of different things throughout the rest of the week. But trying to pepper you with all kinds of content, not only on our show, the Orange and Black Insider, but the others on the Cincy Jungle Podcast channel. We got a very, very good, very generous special YouTube donation here from James saying, I'm hoping for a bounce back game against the Cowboys. I have full confidence the offense will get it together. Hooday. Thank you, James, for the super chat donation there. That'll go to the Pollock Family Foundation and enter you in some giveaways. So appreciate that. And very generous of you. Thank you. John, let's talk about this game here for the remainder of the show. The Bengals travel to Dallas. I got to tell you, just to tee this one up, I've already got them, and I may be cursing them already. I've already got them this week. This is how confident I am in this game, and I was confident in this game prior to Dak Prescott going down, and I know that was just a few hours after they lost. I felt that the Bengals were going to go in there and play, for the lack of better words, pissed off football. I think they are, you know, you heard Jeff talk about urgency and other elements to that. I just feel I've picked them in my survival pool this week, but I feel that the Bengals just are going to go in there and kind of take it to Dallas. There is kind of the weird element of the backup quarterback. What are they going to do? I feel Dallas has regressed in some areas. And then of course the backup quarterback situation, but still not an easy game. But I think the Bengals, just on the surface, before we get into player matchups, key matchups, and more tomorrow with Jeff, I feel pretty good about this game for a variety of reasons.
They're kind of due for a win against Dallas. You know the last time the Bengals beat the Dallas Cowboys?
I'm trying to remember. I know in, what was it, 2018 that they would have played them at home? Well, they didn't. They lost last year, right, at home. 2018, I think they lost out there. 2016, I think they lost out in Dallas as well. I'm trying to keep track, but
it's been every 4 years. Like 2020 was when Brandon Allen was a quarterback. They fumbled right. It like three times. 2016,
that's the one I'm thinking of. Yeah,
they got ran over by Zeke as a rookie. Last time the Bengals beat the Cowboys was 2004, which was a home game. I remember they were wearing orange jerseys and they beat them 26.
Anthony Wright, or who was the quarterback at that? Was that Romo still?
It was before Tony Romo. That's how long it's been since the Bengals beat the Dallas Cowboys, which kind of happens with NFC teams playing AFC teams. But yeah, they're kind of due.
they are due, and this would be the ultimate get right game for the Bengals after losing this one that they lost last week. I think, you know, there are a lot of places to start, but I kind of want to start again on the offensive line, particularly now that one of the Bengals' big ticket free agents on the offensive line was let go by Dallas and Lael Collins. And now there's questions on the Dallas offensive line, and you've got still questions about the Bengals' offensive line, but now you've had a week's worth of game experience against a good defensive line and hoping that things kind of coalesce in a better way this week than they showed last week.
Yeah, I think this is why the game is maybe going to be a little bit closer than people think, because I look at what happened last week, and it wasn't necessarily the Steelers secondary played fantastic, because Jamar Chase still had a great game against a mismatch at cornerback. And I don't think the Cowboys secondary is anything really to boast about aside from, you know, Trayvon Diggs' ball skills. But I think Micah Parsons and DeMarcus Lawrence off the edge, like, that still poses potential issues for the Bengals, especially for Jonah Williams. Like, I think Williams is a fine player, but Micah Parsons looks like a mismatch for any left tackle who he goes up against. And I think quick pressure generated by the Cowboys in this sense, I think that might limit how explosive the Bengals offense can be if they're looking to be more explosive, if they're looking to finally take the top off of a defense this year. So it really comes down to, I think, like, how just methodical can their offense be with dealing with that pass rush? Like, how can they nullify Micah Parsons off the edge, DeMarcus Lawrence off the edge? Because, like, they have creative ways of getting to the passer, and Micah is just this athletic freak who somehow bends around the edge in ways where it's like his get off is not even like that insane, but all of a sudden, like, he's dipping around the tackle with this insane hip flexibility, and it's like it's really hard to stop. So I think they have the pass rush to keep the Bengals offense at bay to a certain extent, but I do think that there's an element where if the pass rush is nullified just a little bit, like, the Cowboys secondary is definitely ripe for allowing big plays, and T. Higgins coming back healthy, like, that's obviously important. But Chase and Diggs is history going back to LSU Alabama, where Chase got the better of Diggs. I think that's going to be in the back of Diggs's mind, and I think he's going to have something to prove in this game, and maybe Chase can take advantage of that. Maybe this is like when Chase and Burrow kind of pop off for the first time this year. So I'm with you. Like, I definitely, like, see the scenario where the offense just has a complete get right game, but I'm definitely not counting out how Micah Parsons alone can impact this game, because we saw how just a handful of Steelers just completely turned the tides of last week's game.
Absolutely. I this is an interesting comment from Fried Baloney. I think that's the name there, but by the way, they've been bringing this all night. A lot of interesting commentary in the live YouTube chat, but I'm not sure if I care as much about the victory. I just want them to figure out something in the run game and the O-line to gel. And that's kind of part of where I'm going next, and I'm kind of running in my own mind here. This summer and leading up to the regular season, Zach Taylor and even Joe Burrow as well kind of said, we want to be balanced. We want to have, you know, rushing attempts that sort of mirror the pass attempts, it sounded like, in terms of their approach on offense. That definitely was the approach early last season as they eased Burrow back in. Now, obviously, things derailed pretty quickly in the game last week, kind of forcing them to throw the ball 50-plus times. But I'm thinking, based on what defenses may give them or not give them, and the amount of turnovers, not that you want to control Joe Burrow by any means, but I'm thinking the idea this week has to be more balance and a more balanced attack on offense, more Joe Mixon. And oh, by the way, are we going to see Chris Evans do anything on offense, get any offensive snaps? Where was he last week?
Yeah, I mean, he was on the bench. Like, he didn't even do anything in the return game because I think Boswell just kicked it into the end zone all the time. And I honestly don't think that was that unexpected. I think that it's very clear that they have a level of trust with Pirine over Evans in those situations. And even Pirine barely saw the field. I think he was only out there because this is kind of flowing under the radar. Did Joe Mixon, like, suffer an open wound in, like, the third quarter? He was apparently bleeding and he had to get taped up on his arm or something like that.
And he left Pirine again, had, I think, right?
Yeah, and then Pirine had the wherewithal to pick up that fumble, even though it was against the rules. So there's definitely a clear gap in the trust that the coaches have in Pirine compared to Chris Evans. And the run game in general, I think it was encouraging that even in the handful of times that they ran the ball as shotgun, it seems like that was more frequent than they did all of last year. That was my main complaint about the run game. It was way too predictable in the sense that, yeah, if they're under center, it's either play action or it's a run, and their play action game has never been effective or creative in the slightest, and doesn't seem like that was much improved against the Steelers. A good run game is built around just an offensive line working as a cohesive unit and just gaining push against the opposing defensive line. And I think the fact that, you know, the interior of the Cowboys defensive line is not very good, I think that's an area where Karras, Kappa, and Volson and company, they can get right. Obviously, Collins has something to prove against the team that cut him loose for an undrafted rookie or third-year player in Terrence Steele, so he'll be playing with something to prove. Jonah Williams is looking to bounce back. So, yeah, I think in the run game, the Bengals would be better against the Cowboys' defensive line, which is like the opposite of what you would expect on the other side of the ball, because the Cowboys' offensive line is kind of in disarray. Like, they're going to be down their left guard. They have Zach Martin still, but they're bringing Jason Peters back from the streets right now. Like, he's probably going to start a left tackle. They have Tyler Smith, who started left tackle last week. He's a rookie. He might move in side to left guard. The Bengals defensive line looks so good against the Steelers, and just stuffing the run and filling the gaps. I don't think that the Cowboys are going to do enough to take the pressure off of Cooper Rush with their running game, which is why, yeah, the game might get out of hand pretty quickly.
But as much as we've applauded the Bengals defense last week, and for good reason, with a backup quarterback, you're going to need to generate consistent pressure, maybe get the occasional sack, and all of that leads to more turnovers. Chidobe Awuzie, aside from a phantom pass interference call last week, I thought he played outstanding. I think he had a very high grade in pass coverage snaps and whatnot. I mean, he played outstanding. I think Eli Apple allowed, what, two catches, 8 yards or something is what he was credited for, something to that effect. I mean, he played pretty well last week, too. So if that pressure can be a bit more consistent, some sacks and that sort of thing, you can really rattle a backup quarterback potentially and force more turnovers. So, yes, I mean, I think more of the same and then some from the defense, right? I mean, I know it's asking still a bit much based on how much their backs were against the wall, so to speak, last week. But, you know, a little bit more of those wow plays from Hendrickson, Hubbard and company off the edge and you know, others in that defensive group would probably go a long way this week.
I'm unfortunately thinking back to last year against the Bears, the same week, week two, they bring back Jason Peters to start a left tackle, and they end up playing a backup quarterback that game, a game that most of the country expected the Bengals to win, and they came out so ugly. Now, obviously, they already came out ugly and they have that in the back of their minds. But if they shut out Cooper Rush, that would be the first backup quarterback that they've completely nullified in team history. So until I see it happen, like, it's still something that remains to be seen if they can actually do what's expected of them and limit a limited quarterback. You would think logically, yeah, Cooper Rush, even with CeeDee Lamb on the field on offense, like, he's not going to be able to do very much despite, like Hobson said, his continuity within the system. I think just the Cowboys' lack of solidity at offensive line doesn't bode well for them either. It's just hard to see a reality where the Cowboys score more than like 13, 17 points. Mm-hmm. And even last week, as much as the Bengals struggled against a better defense than the Steelers, they still scored 20. So yeah, like it's definitely feels like you can confidently predict a win, but there's always that but with a backup quarterback against the Bengals. I hate to say it because logistically, like, it should just be a win, but some things just don't make sense in this game.
Yeah, I think there's still some kinks to be worked out, namely the red zone offense, like I said earlier. So if I'm going to do a score prediction, I'll go 27-16 Bengals. I think they take care of business. They are favored by about a touchdown at this point in time. So I think they take care of business, take care of it pretty steadily, and get things back on track. And then, you know, not to look ahead past this week, but there is some interesting stuff on the horizon with the Jets, because we don't know what's going to happen with the quarterback position at this point. Initially, Robert Saleh said Zach Wilson is going to be out for the next first four weeks of the season. And so that would mean the Bengals wouldn't see him in week three. Well, now he was spotted at practice this week. So, you know, it's a lot earlier than anticipated. So the Bengals may or may not, and whatever you think about Zach Wilson at this point in time, I know, but he is their starter. So what looked like potentially the Bengals facing two backup quarterbacks in back-to-back weeks may not be the case.
And yeah. And if they don't, like, it's Joe Flacco, and they have a lot of experience against him in both good and bad situations. So
yeah,
in this game, I made a prediction on the Blogging the Boys SB Nation podcast, which you guys should definitely check out. After this, I made the prediction that the Cowboys actually cover. I'm going to say that the Bengals offense looks better, but I think they are a lot more conservative. And it's the old mantra, oh, take what the defense gives you. Don't force anything down the field. I do think that Micah Parsons is going to have a good game. And I think a player of his caliber can make a significant impact in slowing an offense down. So I'm going to say the Bengals score only 17 points, and I'm going to give the Cowboys 13. I think Cooper Rush may have a decent drive or two, and there's going to be fear and panic inside of that the Bengals are allowing another backup quarterback to walk all over them. But the Cowboys have no running game against the Bengals defense. I think that's a huge mismatch. And yeah, I think the defense does enough to limit a backup quarterback in that offense. And also the Cowboys, like, who even knows what's going on with them? Like, mentally right now, like, another year where Dak is hurt, they've got a lame duck coach with Sean Payton in the wings. Like, I don't know how quickly that thing is going to unravel, but like, yeah. I don't see the Bengals coming off of this past week completely, you know, crapping the bed again.
Right. I'm in agreement with you. All right. Well, we both think the Bengals win and take care of business pretty easily here, but we'll see what happens. We kind of thought a little bit of the same maybe last week. We didn't think it would be easy necessarily, but seemed like a game they had in hand, but not so much the case. Let's drop the mic and get out of here. What do you have for us, John Sheeran, as we close up shop and get set to bring more content for the people?
I got all the content I needed today when Joe Burrow proclaimed himself as a cat guy. I feel like that's a huge win for my brand as a fellow cat guy himself. So
do you have a cat?
I don't, but I'm getting a cat as soon as I know people have been commenting about the lack of furniture in this place. It's getting furnished within the next week. There will be a couch behind me. You'll have Randall chilling on the couch. I'm getting some other furniture as well. Might even improve the microphone quality because it's not that much of an echo here. But as soon as this place is furnished, I'm on the lookout for a cat for sure.
Gotcha. Okay. Well, I am more of a dog guy, but I've had a cat before. And what was odd, he was a cool little cat. And he was actually almost a little bit like a dog. You know how some cats kind of hide and shy away from people? When people would come in, he'd kind of come down the stairs and check everything out. And he was a cool little cat. I liked it. So if I were to be able to find, I know you can't really pick the personality of a cat, but if you had, you know, I'd be stoked to have a cat like like his name was Ricky. So if I had a cat named Ricky again, I would. Yeah, no, he's a good dude. Yeah, I don't have much except for just to say thank you again for Jeff Hobson. You know, it's been, I'm trying to go back. It's been a long time that since he's been on this show, way too long. And, you know, he's even in email exchanges, he's super gracious. He's, you know, I would love to come on, and I, you know, just making time. And he's just, I think what's cool about him and how he treats people, but also how he talks on when you're interviewing him and all of that, you kind of see it through his writing too, right? I mean, like his personality really comes out in a lot of his writings, not only just the Hobson's Choice, but some of these, even if he's just reporting on quotes and he adds in, you know, kind of fun, colorful phrasings and all kinds of different things. And he has been with the organization through thick times, through thin times. And he pretty much has a smile through it all, it seems. So just a guy that I admire a lot, not only because he covers the team that we all also cover and care about, but, you know, just a guy just been following his career for a really long time. So it's always exciting to have a guy like that on the show.
I've learned so much about writing through just reading him. And I feel like a good writer is usually kind of like, there's like a melting pot in his or her abilities. Like they take some from this person, they take something from this person, and just how your overall style is a conglomeration from the people that you read the most. And obviously every Bengals fan reads Jeff Hobson, and just the way that he, I think, conveys information and the way that he tells stories, most importantly, that I feel like is why he's lasted as long as he has. Just the relationships that he's built with players and coaches, and you can just tell that like he cares about sharing their lives and their stories in ways that not a lot of other beat writers or team reporters do. And that's why he's been in the game for so long, and it's why he's one of the best at what he does.
Yep, well said. And I gotta pin this comment here. You may not like it, but this is from Rob Duncan, and we can just leave with this.
Cats, Rob has not been around the right cats, or Rob is just a bad person himself and has gotten the worst out of cats, man. That's a bad take.
Oh man, I am a little surprised about Burrow talking about being a cat guy. It surprises me a little bit.
Burrow's chill. Cats are chill when you just give them their space and their boundaries, man. Like they're amazing creatures.
I will say that cats, the cool thing about cats, at least when I was like a bachelor, when I had my cat, you know, you could go away if they're really smart. They ration their food and their water and all that kind of stuff. You leave them a clean litter box, you give them enough food and enough water, you go away to Vegas for a weekend, you come back and they're fine. You know, they know what to do. All right. Well, we're going to get out of here. Keep it to CincyJungle.com for your news, opinions, analysis. Keep it to the Orange and Black Insider for a lot of the same and a lot of different content. We've got, like I said, Jeff Kavanaugh, who covers the Cowboys with the Believe Network. He's going to be joining us tomorrow, so we'll have that. We'll have all kinds of other things on this show and on the podcast channel, so go catch up. Join us live if you can. We appreciate it. John, I will see you a bunch more times this week, I think. But
we'll see it's you good, more times, good, man.
Yeah, good chatting with you, and good hanging with you and Jeff this week.
I'll talk to you guys soon.
All right.